The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Timothy Harvey, and I am sitting across the recently revamped, redesigned, and somewhat cluttered bunker.
Needs to be recycled.
Recycled.
Yes.
Across from Mr. Jason Hunt.
Hello.
And this is your latest episode of H2O, our weekly, except for next week.
Are we taking a break next week?
I'm going to be in the same state as you. I'm going to be in New York.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes.
And I cannot guarantee at this time that, and I might, let me qualify that. There's a chance that I could call in from New York to see what the schedule allows. We're trying to cram. I'm traveling along with a friend of mine and her kids as we try and cram everything you try and cram into when you go to someplace you've never been with as much neat stuff as is in New York.
Yeah. So,
and FAO Schwarz is closing.
I saw that.
And it will still be open when we're there.
Mm-mm.
So
I gotta go. Think, gotta go. Gotta get on the keyboard.
Yeah. Well. Yep. Yeah. So yes. This is your latest episode. We may have one next week. We may not.
Of course, if we don't, that'll throw off the schedule for Amazing Stories too. So
you'll have to get a guest host in.
I could be. Those of you who have not heard the news, we are syndicated over on Amazing Stories Magazine's website. They are running our shows a week behind our new show. So this episode this week will run on Amazing Stories next week. And it's been going up for a while. We're very happy to be over there.
Very much so.
And those of you who do listen on Amazing Stories website, we do appreciate your taking the time to listen to some of our back catalog, I guess you could say, our archive. This week, man, there's so much. Talk about.
The internet happened again.
Yeah. I think I want to hold off on the Game of Thrones discussion because of two reasons. One, I haven't read the books. Two,
sure.
I haven't watched the show. And that could be problematic, let's say, because I don't want to start spouting opinions without having any kind of information behind it.
I think the context here is not so much about the show, although I mean that's the way this all started.
Yeah, well, Variety has had a thing today about the audience blowback, and HBO is sitting there kind of circling the wagons a little bit. This one could be a much bigger blow up than the last two times that something like this has happened.
Yeah, well, I think the larger question though is that, and for those of you who've managed to miss this, there was a rape scene in the most recent Game of Thrones episode, and it was not the first rape scene.
No,
quite a bit of blowback on this. People very, very unhappy that they've gone here again.
Yeah.
It's like Game of Thrones, where women go to get raped. It's like, hang on, this is, you know. So, but what's interesting is that the media reaction, as in the folks who are commenting, the reviewers, there's been a real level of unhappiness on the people whose job it is to watch the show.
Right.
And I think what's been very, and we can certainly talk about this in depth as this unfolds, because it is apparently turned into a big deal. But what's interesting is that the folks who just like us, we watch these programs, we read these books, we watch these, you know, these films, whatever the subject is, and we reach a point with something where we decide we just don't want to carry on with it. And we're seeing some of that with some of the folks who are reviewing or commenting on Game of Thrones. But for example, you know, you never saw the second new Star Trek movie. You had no interest in it. You did not feel like you wanted to go there.
Right. Although,
yeah,
we have continued to cover the Star Trek
sure,
stuff
sure,
on
but,
the site. It's just me personally, I haven't gone to see it. But we did have a review of the movie we published.
But
we have covered it.
In specific reference, the folks over at the Mary Sue decided they didn't want to cover it at all. They were done. They were going to stop dealing with Game of Thrones altogether.
En masse. They all decided.
And it's interesting because, the editorial team sat down together from what the article that they wrote about it.
Yeah.
And they said, none of us want to do this. And, okay. I mean,
That's their choice.
I think, it's just like if... There aren't too many other shows that we're playing in this kind of ballpark right now of anything else that people are watching. But I think that if we could reach, I'm sure there could be, and there probably will be, because people tend to go there wherever there is. You can find a place that's going to upset people. But I think it's a very, very interesting. We should talk about this more as we get as more happens, because it's having an impact on the creative team,
right? The other question on that, not only is it having that kind of an impact, from a standpoint of audience and coverage and all that, but it also raises the question especially in terms of blog sites or news sites or websites like ours or the Mary Sue or Ain't It Cool or IO9 or anything like that. Where is the line between bloggers and journalists in terms of the things what we cover? Now, what we've talked about here, Sci-Fi for me, our aim generally, at least mine, I don't know about anybody else. I drag you all kicking and screaming over into the.
There really is some kicking and screaming. Hear it or see it, but
you
it actually
see
happens.
The bruises I get.
That's right.
But no,
right about shin level.
The idea here is that we're attempting to be more journalistic in our content. I mean, yes, we do have opinion pieces, and we do have op-eds, and we do have rants like Dustin's about the new gem and the holograms.
Sure.
But they're labeled as such. We've got a big piece of artwork across the top. It's an opinion piece, and then we also have general news items. It's just Simon Pegg's going to write the next Star Trek movie. That's a news item. Avengers makes $1 billion. That's a news item. That's not opinion.
Sure.
And so the question then becomes, in light of the Mary Sue's decision not to cover something, because they call their coverage promotion, and I would disagree with that. But at what point do you stop covering something just because you decide you don't like it? As opposed to if you're a journalism site, if you're a news site, I mean, I'm sure that there are people who were covering the biker shootout in Waco that didn't like covering it, but it's news.
Well,
now we have to start defining our terms.
Well, okay, but hold on. For sites like IO9 or us, or in large part the Mary Sue,
right?
We are covering a piece of news. We are covering a segment.
Sure, yeah. It's niche journalism.
Right. And also it becomes the real question is, because it is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're not talking about something where, I'm sure there's been a whole bunch of new data coming out that journalists are getting PTSD. War correspondents, but also folks who cover the crime beat.
Oh yeah,
because the exposure they end up. So there's an impact. There's certainly an impact. And just as
and for the record, I just had this thought. I don't want to be comparing the shootout in Waco with the stuff we cover because
it's completely different thing.
I don't want to take away from that. But
our coverage does not usually involve. Death or jail time, or large.
Yeah, I just want to put that out there.
Right, I can see where the Mary Sue's coming from here because when anybody who is reading our review or one of their reviews or IO9's review on anything, say Dustin and my The Walking Dead reviews, okay. We know we have an audience for those. You know, right. you look at the numbers. As soon as those reviews go up, bam! You know, you can sit there and go, okay. And it's pretty consistent across the board. There is a certain, you know, that percentage of people are going to be are interested in reading what Dustin and I have to say. They want to laugh at what Dustin's saying. They want to hear me go off on a rant, whatever, or read those things. So to a certain degree, we are promoting the show because we're saying we're enjoying it or we're hate watching or whatever it is. And so I can see that the Mary Sue looking at it as they know that there is some of the audience that watches the show based on reading a review from the Mary Sue saying you should watch this show. And so it's the give and take between the reviewer and the audience, and that give and take between the folks who are saying you should do this, you should watch this, versus the folks who do watch it. And there's just as we are, we want them to comment on our articles. We want that feedback. So if we say something and someone disagrees with us, we actually want them to say that to us. We want them to tell us.
Yeah, we do invite the dialogue.
Right, we want the dialogue. Yeah. So there's a relationship you've established with your reader. And so if you and since we are talking about you know, we get free stuff. We get screeners and we get books.
Right.
You know, the publishers and the studios, they send stuff. There's a and the expectation is that we will give an honest review. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not the days of payola.
Right.
Flashback to a music industry thing that a lot of people don't even remember anymore, it seems. Oh. But it's the kind of thing where if you sit there and say, you know, there was this great thing that happened in Game of Thrones, you're kind of promoting it because you're saying, I liked it, you should like it too, here's the good thing I'm saying about it. That, and so I can see their A to B to C on that.
I can see that. See, to me, being... Having been in the media industry for some years, I guess I have a different perspective on what promotion actually is.
But this is entertainment. Promotion.
Now, I know. But promotion a to me is being engaged in actively, promoting, but actively. Encouraging people to actually go and watch or participate in something or do it. And I don't see that writing recaps and doing reviews necessarily promotes the thing as it so much as it does comments on the thing. And there's a difference to me. Because watch it.
I would say there is a difference, but you're also looking at the difference between entertainment commentary and, say, political commentary or social commentary, or
I don't think that it is, because if I'm going to comment on something that Ted Cruz says, that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm promoting Ted Cruz. Or if I'm commenting on something the president says, I'm not promoting the president.
Well, again, that's where it's different, because I think for entertainment, we're talking about something that if you are writing a positive review of a show,
right,
then your audience is more likely to go out and watch that show than say, I am to write a positive review of a Ted Cruz speech. And for those of you at home, there's probably some laughter happening here. But if I write a positive review of a Ted Cruz speech,
right,
you're not going to rush out necessarily to watch a copy of the Ted Cruz speech because I said to. It's a different thing because entertainment is different. You know, the way that we as a culture, the way as we individuals interact with entertainment is different than the way we interact with politics or religion or because entertainment cuts across. And pop culture, pop entertainment cuts across social lines, it covers age lines.
Yeah, but you're going to have people that are completely uninterested in Game of Thrones, no matter what anybody says positive about it. So I don't see that much of a difference.
Okay, well,
agree to disagree there, I guess, because it's, you know, to me, promotion has a specific context for me, and that's, you know, it's experiential. It's something that you know. based on my background, because, you know, making TV commercials and making TV station promotion materials and that kind of thing.
Right.
That it has a completely different definition for me.
Yeah, I think it really is a context thing. So I think really, because I'm looking at it not coming from the background, even though my with the graphic design background, I have some experience in advertising and etc. That was never the focus.
Right.
So to me, it's very much a, saw Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Excellent film. Highly recommended.
Right.
Okay. If I were to write a review, which I probably should,
by Friday.
Okay. If I were to write a review and sit there and say, you should watch this film, I'm promoting it. Because I said, this is a really, really good film, and you should find it, because even if it's not playing in your town, you should, you know.
And I see that more as an endorsement rather than a promotion. A promotion to me involves somebody gets paid. It's an advertisement. It's part of a marketing strategy.
Well, but you know what? And it's entirely possible that wait a minute. If Game of Thrones, so what if you get a screener? If the folks at HBO are sending you screeners, in a sense, there's a give and take relationship there. We provide you the screener. You give us a review. You don't have to give us a positive review, but
that's not any different from watching it when it airs on HBO. Like we're getting,
but you get it in advance.
We just get it in advance.
I see their point. I think that, you know, and what's interesting, I think the question becomes, we see this more and more. There's a feedback from an audience that can influence creators of programs, because you can have your audience react to you.
Right.
As a creator,
of the internet, that's almost instant.
Instant.
Yeah.
And so if you have gone where the audience does not wish you to go,
right,
or the audience finds that where you went is something that is a bad place, and what's interesting here is that you're adapting a material. You're adapting a book series. Mm-hmm. And I think your audience understands that you can't do a word for word the book as the film.
Right. Particular case, it was a merging of two characters rather than introduce a brand new one that had absolutely no history on the show.
Right. And that's a decision you make when you got, you know,
a cast of 100.
Yeah. And you have to decide how you're going to do this. And adapting original material is hard. Let's make this very, very clear.
Yes.
It is very, very hard to take the work of any author, especially a popular one, and adapt it without ticking somebody off.
And I think the other thing, too, is not only are you making choices in your story, but you're also making choices based on the presentation medium.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to tell this rip-roaring, sprawling, epic story on the page, because you can take however many pages you need to say it.
Oh, sure. Look at the Lord of the Rings adaptations. You know, the way the books are structured and the way the films are structured are very, very different.
Yes.
And that's because what works on the page does not necessarily work on the screen, and vice versa. I mean, you can, you know, reading a novelization of a movie sometimes is like going, wait, what are you doing?
Yeah,
I don't understand why is
that wasn't in the movie,
right? Exactly. Yeah.
Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 3 are, I don't want to say the worst, but they do that quite a bit. And I actually talked to Vonda McIntyre about it one time, because she had gotten an early script,
right,
that had things in it,
which happens a lot with novelizations,
that aren't in the movie, and you know, things that got changed, things that got edited out, and such. And so the book structurally is a little bit different. There are scenes in there that aren't in the film.
I got the book of Star Trek V.
Oh yeah.
A week before the film came out.
Mm-hmm.
It hit the stores a week before the film came out, and I bought the book because I've never had a problem divorcing the visual and the printed page. So,
right.
It's like, what? You don't want to see it first? Well, it's a different thing. Reading the book and then seeing the film has always been two very different things for me.
Yeah.
And the book's actually pretty good.
Well,
and it's based on the script,
script. Yeah.
So, and you're like going, this could be very, very interesting. And then you got the movie, and you're like going, and something happened here.
I read Star Trek II novel mm-hmm. before I saw the movie, and I wish I hadn't.
Right. Well, yeah. See, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a risk. It's a real risk. But what you end up with, but and so it's tough. So you have things like Dune, the Dune books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had two Dune adaptations. There's talks of a third.
Yeah.
And because it's hard to adapt. I mean, Herbert covers politics. He covers religion.
Economics.
Yeah. Economics. It is helpful to understand the basic economic theory to read Dune because it's in there.
Yeah.
He looks at East-West relations. He looks at, Middle East and Far East and, you know, basically Soviet and America. It's the layers of that book. There's so many different things happening mm-hmm. there that it's, you know, the fact that we had two adaptations that are even as successful as they are, it's kind of amazing. So it becomes this.
Well, you're going to get Dragon Riders of Pern.
Right.
Is going to be another one that's going to be a challenge because mm-hmm. how do you do that? I've been reading them over the last few months, and rereading them rather.
Right.
And you get a sense there are, I think, 9 different books that all happen at the same time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have the original trilogy. You have the Dragon Singer trilogy that happens in the midst of all of that.
Right.
And then you also have the Renegades of Pern, which happens just prior and during all of that. And I think there's one. There's like 9 of them, just all chronologically, they're all there.
Right.
And then, of course, you've got the Master Harper of Pern, which covers, you know, Robinson's entire life. So there are pieces of the main story in that book as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, how are you even going to do any of all this? You know, because it's all got you either put it all in there and do it as a big sprawling miniseries of some sort,
right?
Or things are going to get cut.
And that's what happens. Is that and generally
that's what's
cut happen. Well, it's like it's
and
like,
that happens with Game of Thrones.
Well, it's like and then it's like Marvel Civil War.
No, oh, yeah, it's not going to be anything like the comic book,
right? And thankfully so, because we talk about comic books' lovely tendency to spiral a story out of control.
Yes,
not as bad as the Spider-Clone saga, but it's up there.
Brand new day.
Oh God. Well, now that we have a hint of what the new Marvel universe is going to look like.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the new Marvel 52. I mean, wait.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm sorry. Is this
Marvel plus 8? Was it 8 months later? That's what they're going to do. Eight months after Secret Wars.
I'm looking at this and going, you know, okay. Clearly, somebody at DC leaked their sales numbers, and you guys liked them enough because that's all this is. I have very little illusion in my mind that what we're getting over at Marvel right now is ooh. Oddly, you know, for a company that is not in any danger at this point of the DC universe overtaking the Marvel universe and cinematically.
No, I don't think DC will ever catch up.
But they are. They sure seem to be of the desire to chase them with their storyline publishing model right now, which I think is. Hey, you know what? All power to them. I wish them the best of luck. Not being, you folks may have noticed periodically from time to time that I am not a fan of the new 52 in large part. the horror titles, yay. But other than that.
Speaking of new 52.
Yeah.
That brings up Flashpoint.
Yeah.
And that brings up the Flash finale.
Which we just watched.
But we're not going to talk about it here. We're going to talk about it over on Rogues Gallery.
Which I won't be here for because you're doing it on Saturday. And I'm going to be.
No, we're doing it Sunday.
I still won't be here.
Yeah,
I fly out on Saturday. I'm sorry. I got a chance to go to New York. I'm going to take it.
There you go.
Broadway shows.
Yeah, no, but see, that's another thing where you've got a story that's a lot of people were thinking that the Flash finale was going to go to Flashpoint.
Well, and
they
danced up to that edge, and without the risk of going into spoilers for the folks who may not have watched it.
Yep.
Wait a minute, this is coming out on Thursday. Hopefully, you'll watch it.
Yeah, this airs on Thursday, so we're 2 days out.
But what they did do, and we'll let you guys talk about it on Rogues Gallery more in detail. But what they did take it was an interesting place.
Yeah, I thought so.
especially considering what they did to us at the very, very end.
Except for the huge plot logic hole right in the middle of it.
Oh, God. You know, okay, and you and I just had this conversation about time travel stories. And as much as I have enjoyed The Flash, very, very much.
Well, and we even talked about The Flash as part of that, as saying they've got to be very, very careful on this.
And they did the right thing when it came to part of it, and then they get to the end and they do the thing where, spoilers, Eddie shoots himself so that he can Eobard Thawne is never born. And he's written out of history, which promptly means that everything he ever did, he never did, which means he never came back in time and killed Harrison Wells and took over in his life. It means that he never set off the particle accelerated explosion, which means that...
No Flash, no Speed Force, no Time Force. Yeah.
It's just like, hang
Wait
on.
A minute, yeah.
You just,
well, and how
they,
many times...
And they talked about this on the show. I mean, they even
How
gave,
many times... Because we've done this over on Level 1177 talking about the Marvel stuff.
Right.
Don't look too hard at the comic book show.
Do not stare directly at the comic book universe. Do not stare directly at the comic book logic. Do not stare directly at the comic book anything. Always bear in mind that once upon a time, not that long ago, nobody cared about continuity. Not DC, not Marvel, not any other comic book company.
Right.
No, but Superman used to have some of the most bizarre powers.
Oh, yeah.
And Batman used to... There was a giant penny in the Batcave, and it wasn't that long ago there was a giant penny in the Batcave. And the Joker, it was the Killing Joke, where the Joker finally became scary again.
Mm-hmm.
Now
even there's a backlash against that.
Oh yeah, but it doesn't. You know, it's not just DC. Look over at Marvel, the entire '90s, all an entire decade. Nobody can really remember anything good coming out of Marvel Comics for the entire '90s, including Marvel Comics, because they almost disappeared.
Speaking of which, I have a whole pile of X-Men number one from those days.
Oh yes. So many different covers. So many.
Oh, I've got one cover, but I've got a lot of them.
Oh, God. Well, yes. Okay. Yeah. This is something else that I don't
not,
think...
Not the right kind of collectible to have.
Too many people don't miss in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Is buy all the different covers or multiple copies of the covers. They're going to be collector's items. All 47 million copies that we've published.
Including the 3D ones.
Yeah. Lenticular.
Yes, the lenticular.
Why
things.
Was this? But this is the thing. We bought them. We did. And that's...
I didn't.
Well, it was the 90s. There were many, true. Many terrible...
Oh, I was talking about the new 52 ones. That, you know, every six months, the new variant stuff.
Well, yeah.
Speaking of collectibles, collectible items and franchise material and toys and merchandise.
Stuff that we can highly recommend.
Yes, we can. Superherostuff.com. They are our sponsor, and we do appreciate their support. We got to turn in an order.
We do.
We have to get some more stuff for the bunker. All sorts of things. You know, superhero items from DC and Marvel, and I don't know if they've got IDW or Image. Maybe some Boom. We need to check into that. See if they got any license for Valiant, because Valiant Comics is coming up and nipping on their heels a little bit. Star Wars, Doctor Who, mm-hmm. Godzilla, all sorts of stuff over there. So we are going to take a break, fill coffee mugs, and let you hear a message from superherostuff.com along with some of our other shows here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio, and we will be back when H2O continues right after this.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at superherostuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. Superherostuff.com, where heroes shop.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV, that's our YouTube channel, where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out, Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV, all part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio, until you unsubscribe in a sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here, along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
Making plans and schemes as we are over coffee. We still need a coffee sponsor for one of our shows.
We do. However, I just read a really, and actually it's kind of a subject, over at the folks of Cracked, who have become genre commentators about half the time anyway.
What's up with that anyway?
Well, they're genre fans. So, you know.
Still.
Well, yeah, I know.
Stay in your own niche.
Stay in the comedy, people.
That's your sandbox. You go play in your own sandbox over there.
But curiously, they brought up a point about journalism, because there is some newspaper or magazine, the online version, published what is essentially an ad for a coffee maker under the but it's
like an advertorial.
Well, yeah. Well, no. Except, that, yeah, it's blatant.
Yeah.
And it's also one of those things where, you know, things like the person behind the coffee, this particular brand of coffee, is talking about how, you know, it's free of toxins and we're fighting the medical establishment.
No GMOs.
And it's just like, yeah, you know, and so and so likes to disagree with the medical establishment. Like, this is necessarily a good thing.
Right.
And this is, it is so, and the entire, it's like, I don't know. They used to do, you know, remember in the days of clickbait, they would have like, you know, five pages for what is a two-page article. And basically it's just thing after thing going, no, 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 you're not, you know. And it we see this a lot. And if you go to any website, pretty much, well, let me qualify that. If you go to a lot of websites under any different type of subject, whether it's politics or entertainment or whatever, pick a subject, you can usually find a list of links to something else on the web.
Yeah, related articles.
Right, and some of them are blatant ads.
Right.
You know, and of course we've all seen the obvious ones, you know, doctors hate her secret or whatever.
Yes, the skinny pill.
That's
and
right.
Why it's dangerous.
You know, or the one where the, my favorite one is the, power companies hate this device.
That's actually because we have, when the TV station that I worked for has some of those, you know, it's basically filler content.
Oh,
and
sure.
Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a paid thing.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you get paid to run those, and you know, however many clicks, you know, dollars per click or whatever.
Right.
So it is. It's advertising just like anything else.
Sure.
And looking at it from the outside, you know, is just in terms of why in the world would we put that on our site? You know, now I'm looking at, you know, the different affiliate marketing stuff that we have
right.
available to us, and we're very selective. We're, you know, we look at, I mean, there's a ton of stuff out there.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, you could do the Google AdWords and the ad choices or whatever that service is, but you run the risk of doing that very sort of thing where you get a bunch of stuff that's on that site that's so sensationalized and, you know, clickbait like we talk about. And
right.
we don't want to do that. But
no.
see, that goes back to the question of journalism versus blogging. For, you know, in terms of the style of your content, it also carries over into the style of your advertising.
Sure.
Because Wall Street Journal is going to run a certain type of ad.
One would hope.
One would hope, yeah. And Playboy is going to run something else.
One would hope.
You know, so that would be, you know.
Well, if you're, unless you're reading Playboy for the articles, in which case.
Sure. Right. Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah. Hey, that, you know.
Well, I mean, you can run a coffee ad in both places,
Playboy, because there have been some great science fiction and fantasy authors who have published first stories because there was.
Oh, that reminds me. Did you see Wired is now sexist, misogynistic, and utter terrible people?
No, I missed that. What happened now?
Oh, somebody, I can't remember where I saw it. I was just talking about, I had a column and then suddenly I didn't. She did some sort of an article somewhere on hers, and Wired asked her if she wanted to contribute, and she came up with all of these ideas, you know, very progressive, you know, liberal politics, social, political, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh, sure.
And Wired said, man, let's rethink, and then stop talking to her. I don't know. It's an interesting read. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but of course the comment boards all blew up with Wired as a bunch of, you know.
Well, and you know, and we've talked about this before. Is that the internet is a wonderful place for communication, and it's a terrible place for communication.
Yep. Well, I thought it was interesting because the general complaint besides Wired is misogynist and sexist. Now, the other complaint that I saw a lot was the fact that Wired is no longer concerned with futurism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the whole, hey, we're looking at what's future tech and,
right.
and those things, kind of like what Omni used to do.
Right.
And I look at it and went, that's an opportunity for us.
There you go. Well, it's interesting, and you and I have talked more about this off air than when we're recording. But there's an interesting, you know, we've seen this a lot where, folks who've been specializing in a niche market of some kind
mm-hmm.
have looked around and said, we need more advertising dollars or more readers or whatever it is,
right?
And so the spread becomes wider. And I understand that completely from a business standpoint. That you know, a lot of these folks have. You know, we do this because we enjoy it. We have no overhead.
Yet.
But the thing is that you know, a lot of these folks are they're supporting large staffs and yep. various things. So like any business, you have a bottom line, and you have to make you have to earn X
right,
amount
yeah,
of money.
Yeah, you cannot make payroll.
And so they hit a ceiling. And they start casting around for mm-hmm. other you know avenues. And
although I would make the argument, and this is going to be our argument, mm-hmm. really, because we are going to stay focused on the niche, because I think it can work to our advantage to be the niche side. Mm-hmm. Because if everybody else is doing pop culture and spreading out their focus, then that leaves us just, you know, laser beam. This is all we're going to talk
sure.
about, and you know, no politics, no gossipy TMZ.
Right.
You know, who's doing what drug this week type stuff.
Right.
You know, we're just gonna stay focused on the genre,
mm-hmm.
and I think that an argument can be made that you'll find your audience that way, because I think that's what sci-fi ran into.
Oh,
I think,
yeah.
I think sci-fi finally woke up
mm-hmm.
and said, we got an audience over here that's not being served because we left them.
Yeah, we stopped serving them.
Yeah. And they're seeing all of the other networks start to come up with shows that should be on sci-fi
right.
and aren't.
Uh-huh.
For various reasons.
Well,
and it's the same kind of thing here. You know, you've got the Mary Sue deciding not to cover Game of Thrones, and however many other sites decide to do that kind of thing, whether it's an editorial decision or if, you know, audience-driven decision or whatever.
Sure.
You know, it sounds kind of predatory about it, but, you know, it's an opportunity, because that audience that is interested in the show
mm-hmm.
that goes to the Mary Sue is not going to find anything about it there anymore. So they're going
right.
to have to look someplace else for it. And I think if you dilute your focus enough, you lose your identity.
Well, sure.
I think.
But I think that I think it'd be an interesting balance because what to me this kind of feels like is the women in refrigerators thing, which is that
maybe.
Well, and let me clarify that the whole rape as a storytelling device.
Which is not new to Game of Thrones.
It is not new to Game of Thrones.
Either in the book or the movie or right. the show.
But it's kind. But in it has the same flavor of you went there to go there. You went there to shock.
That's the reaction.
Well, yes, exactly. That because, is the reaction.
That's one of the reactions. Now let's in the interest of full disclosure, I have not seen it.
Neither have I.
Neither have I. So all we're doing, we're going off of hearsay
we are reacting to the reaction. Okay, this is our observations of the reaction.
Now the other speculation that I've seen is that it raises the possibility that Sansa Stark, who's the victim of the act, as it were, there's speculation that she's playing the circumstances because she's in line to get the North. Apparently she's working to get control of the North.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And now we're getting out of our depth here.
Right.
But some people were sitting there going, it's likely, maybe, there's that possibility that she knew what was going to happen. That she's playing her new husband in order to, manipulate circumstances to make it more possible for her to claim control of the North. Without having watched the shows,
and we are aware that we are something like the last two people on the planet who don't watch the show.
Yeah,
and just for clarity's sake again. It's a huge, huge show, and people seem to really, it's got a gigantic fan base.
Yeah, but as far as your comment about, you know, fridging Sansa, if this plays out to where she's doing all of this on purpose, then she still has agency as a character.
Sure, but I think the biggest reaction, aside from that, one of the biggest reactions we see here is that this is not the first time Game of Thrones has gone there.
No, it's not.
And we saw this a lot, and for the fridging, that should not be the term. Women in refrigerators, women in fridges, women in freezers, women in trunks. And hey, I've made a couple of film noir films that had women in trunks. I admit it. Right. But the women in fridges comes out of a particularly interesting period of time in comic books, where in order for the hero to become the hero, the woman in his life, the important woman in his life, had to die at the hands of an enemy.
Now, to be clear, this is not a new trope just to comic books.
No, it's not.
The term fridging the woman or women in refrigerators comes to a very specific scene in a very specific comic book. It was a Green Lantern.
Right. Kyle Rayner. Right.
And I don't remember the circumstances about it, but his girlfriend.
Major Force.
Yeah,
Major Force killed her.
His girlfriend, Kat Matui, I think.
No, it was the first girlfriend. It was the perfectly ordinary Alex. I think it was Alex.
I can't remember. But yeah, Major Force broke her in twain in several broken bits and put her in the refrigerator.
So Kyle comes home and he opens the fridge.
And there she is.
And there she is.
And that's where the phrase women in refrigerators comes from, because that basically became the defining scene for, it was the equivalent for a lot of people, started comparing tragedy and all of that to that scene, and that's where that phrase came from. But the act itself It's an old storytelling.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, it's well, I mean, it's existed in one form or another. It's, you know, you killed my father or you killed my parents.
Prepare
or,
to die.
Exactly. but it's, you know, it's Bruce Wayne in Crime Alley. You know, it's been around for a long time. But the thing was, is that it seemed to kick off a trend, which I think a lot of people reacted to, which is it's all of a sudden it's like, well, hang on.
Yeah.
How many women have to die for the hero?
Well, and I think we go through these cycles because nowadays the trend is grimdark.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to see something else replace. I mean, women in refrigerators, shoulder pads in the costumes with no feet. There's yeah. all sorts of things, you know, that you will see. The comics industry and the film industry and the television industry cycle through.
Sure. Well, hopefully though, I think we are all very aware. At least I'm assuming that most people with a functioning brainstem are aware that rape is bad.
It is. Yes.
And just for you kids at home.
Yeah. Which is yeah. It's almost sad that we have to make sure that that's clear.
Well, there have been several writers and performers and filmmakers over the course of several, you know, for as long as I've been able to read about these things, who've discussed about the things that the kind of stories they will and will not tell. And we're seeing some of this pop up with writers talking about how, well, I won't tell that story. I don't, there's no need to tell that story.
Right.
And the question becomes, and a lot of people are asking, at what point were these, was the first rape necessary, let alone the second rape? So it becomes this thing. It becomes definitely an audience feedback thing where the audience is. And you're almost getting, it's not quite real time, but it's close.
Yeah, although, you know, by the accounts that I've read, the Sophie Turner was excited for the scene.
Well, but you know the interesting thing is that from an actor looking out,
sure, it's a completely different thing.
Yeah, well, it also becomes a lot of times for a lot of actors it becomes a challenge,
mm-hmm.
because you get to and having done some acting, given the opportunity to play parts that are very different from you.
Yeah.
That are very much not you, to go someplace you've never gone in terms of performing.
Well, and there are times
within limits. Yeah. I mean, obviously, but
and there are times as a writer where let's not even say rape, but a traumatic experience of some sort is necessary to a plot. Look at Batman. You know,
sure.
without the death of his parents, there would be no Batman. So,
right.
So there are times when it's appropriate and necessary to do something bad.
Sure.
To
the
protagonist, to the good guys, in order for something to happen.
And if you're writing a thriller or a horror novel or doing any of this stuff, you can look at there's some really good horror on television right now, and they go places that are you know, horrible things are being done to people.
Mm-hmm.
But
it makes me wonder if the blowback is because of the immediacy of the internet.
Well,
because we have so much.
There's some of that
now,
yeah,
going on. How dare you, terrible, terrible, evil, fie, you know, plague on your houses type of reaction, without seeing it play out to whatever the conclusion of this is going to be.
But
you're seeing the beginning of it.
Well, but we're also seeing something that again, you've got a fan reaction. I think there's a couple of things here, and I could be wrong, but this is what my takeaway so far is that you have not only do you have the fact that they have gone someplace, they have departed from the books in a way that does not seem organic to adapting to the medium. Okay, it doesn't feel that way to a lot of viewers.
Right.
Also, you've gone to a place where, and I'm not going to—I don't want to say rape as entertainment, because this would also be bad.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
rape as plot device.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of like back into women in refrigerators. It's like, was this necessary? Well, actually, no. Could you have gotten the character there without this happening? Yes. And when you get to something like rape, which is, you know, one of the most traumatic things that can happen to a person, It is earth-shattering. It is life-shattering. Mm-hmm. It can destroy people.
Yep.
It can destroy relationships. It can, you know, it's not a one-person impact. It radiates out to family and friends. And there's, I mean, it's, and knowing, knowing a couple of women in my life who have been raped. Well, we're good. We got dark quick. It is not something for pop entertainment. It's just not. I mean, you can, it is hard. It is, and let me call it this. It is hard to argue for a lot of people that there is a need for this to be something that is. It's really hard to justify it in terms of storytelling. The emotional reaction for something like this is very charged. It's hard to get away from that, and I think that it's if you're going to, of course, go do it on the internet, where the immediacy, where the emotion, where you know, like we've talked about, the loudest people are on the internet for good and for ill. It just seems to be a lot of people are really, really surprised they would go here twice.
Right.
Especially considering the first reaction was not exactly positive the first time they had a rape scene. It's going to be really, really hard. I don't know. It just seems like it's going to be really, really hard to justify this in terms of story. And again, we come back to something that we've said over and over again. Story, story, story.
Yeah.
And if you can't take the audience there in terms of the necessity of the story,
which again, it goes back to A, we haven't seen it or read it.
Right.
B, it could be for whatever reason it's possible. It could be the beginning of an arc for her.
Right, but again, you're going to have a lot of people who are going. And we're already seeing this. A lot of people who are going to be saying, why did it have to be this to start that arc? There are other horrible things you could have visited upon her. Why did you have to go to this place where, we're Rolling Stone story aside, we've actually seen a lot more visibility of rape on college campuses. A lot more people are. You know, we've known for years that rape is underreported, and more and more people are feeling. Either through a level, I don't know, comfortable, but they feel like they can or they should report the stuff. And a lot of this is becoming more and more, the immediacy of the internet, the immediacy of the 24-hour news cycle, for good and for ill. It's a thing that is not, it's a real tangible thing in a way that a world with dragons is not. And I think that when we go, there's an interesting thing that happens when we take our entertainment becomes too close to us.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got the personal, when it hits the personal spot.
Right.
You know, there was a reason, there was a huge brouhaha when Bill Shatner kissed Michelle Nichols. And there was a time when you did not do that.
Yeah,
there was no a white man and a black woman kissing. Not around these parts, sir. You know, and you could get lynched. You could get killed. And they did it on TV. It was a big deal. You know, you see that stuff where you're and that's one of the positive ones. You know, I mean, because
sure.
that was a sign. You know, they were basically saying this is okay. But even then, remember the context of the episode. They were forced to do that.
Yeah.
So it becomes
and the other thing too is you've got social commentary. I mean, science fiction has always been a place where you could do that kind of thing. Social commentary and self-examination and all that other kind of thing. Fantasy the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I just think, I don't know. I feel ambivalent about what kind of opinion to have, because and this goes back to being uninformed.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you can see the reactions and everything, and you see all the comments, and you see what everybody is saying about it.
Right.
But, you know, this goes back to what we're talking about context.
Right.
Because for us, there isn't any.
Well, we've spent
a whole hour talking about something we don't know anything about.
But what's interesting is that and part of me finds it very fascinating because I'm completely on the outside looking at.
Mm-hmm.
I am, and don't misunderstand, folks at home, Game of Thrones fans, please do not storm the bunker. It's not that I have a massive dislike of Game of Thrones. It's never caught my imagination the way it has caught
right.
other people's. So, but it's very interesting because I don't have an emotional investment. I'm not a fan. And I don't say that as I'm not a fan of this thing. It's like, I'm not a fan. I'm not a Game of Thrones fan. So I don't have the emotional investment in the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So when they deviate from the books, I'm more interested in looking at what people are saying about, well, that's not what he was like in the book, or that's not what she was like in the book. It's like, okay, all right, interesting. Tell me more, you know.
Yep.
Bring me another article to read about this Game of Thrones thing of yours.
It was red, not green.
Exactly. So it's just, you know, because you and I have been watching, you know, DC Comics unfold versions of characters that we don't necessarily recognize from our time. Just like a generation before, the Silver Age and the Golden Age and, you know, the Bronze Age and the Platinum and the Tinfoil Age.
Except the difference between the Bronze Age, between the Golden Age and the Silver Age was that they weren't the same characters. They were the same code names.
Right.
But Green Lantern, Golden Age Green Lantern was not Silver Age Green Lantern.
Sure,
they had the same name, but it was a completely different character. Legacy characters.
Speaking of which, Flash finale.
Oh, yes.
Gabe. Jay Garrick's
helmet comes through the foredeck.
Awesome. But you look at, say, John Byrne's Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The comic book miniseries post-crisis was a very different version than a lot of people were used to.
Yeah.
And so you see this stuff being rendered. So, but it's very, very interesting to be on the outside looking in on this for that very simple fact that we don't have the emotional attachment of saying, you know, the Joker shouldn't have tattoos across his forehead, which apparently he does in a recent photograph. Whatever that means,
he shouldn't.
Well, I don't think he should either. But you know what? It also could mean it means that somebody got a magic marker and wrote, you know, or he did himself in the mirror. It doesn't mean anything, you know. It's until we see anything, until we, you know, get footage, real footage. You know, okay, it's a shot from the. From the set, okay. What it is? There's no context.
No context.
So, but yeah, it's just the days of the letter writing campaign. Remember when they were in a cancel check, and there was a subway campaign, right? Okay. Now, you can crash the network's website.
Oh yeah.
With your, you know, it's
DDoS,
and this was just a few years ago. I mean, the ability for a creator to get instant feedback, but also,
well, you look at what's going on. You look at Twitter, because it is a constant over on Twitter. The people who are wanting Young Justice to come back.
Oh sure.
Even what two? How long has it been now? A year and a half, two years since it's been canceled.
And I am a solidarity baby.
Still a campaign for it.
Well, yeah, but I think, and they're not going to get it.
No.
Which is a shame, because Young Justice was really good.
Yeah, it was good.
Very good.
Good show.
It straddled the line between something that would appeal to younger audiences and older audiences.
And I love how they included the Hall of Justice from Super Friends. It was like, yeah, there it is.
See, they get it.
Yeah.
But so it becomes this, it's a good place for heaven's sakes. There's still folks who think that we're going to get another Firefly movie. I want one. Don't, you know, yes.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
It's not going to happen.
No.
Or let me let me just say that I think the odds are extremely poor.
Yeah, because, you know, two, three years ago, we would have said there's never going to be another Star Wars movie.
Well, and, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hang on, what?
Yeah.
or that we're going to get the original cast back.
Never
say
never.
Exactly. Well, and it's, which is good. I mean, to some degree, you know, it's, you know, but we've also talked about how this has the potential to be bad as well. So,
yeah.
We live in interesting times in terms of entertainment, and I think that we can have nice things,
and sometimes
until we break them. That's it. Yes, that's it exactly. We'll have nice things until we break them. I'm just. It's going to be very interesting to see where this goes because, you know, again, the creative staff seems to be very, very surprised that this is.
Right.
They've had this reaction, and just as the audience seems to be very, very surprised that this is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very curious place to be in terms of this sort of thing. You know
what I just had a thought. This is, we're recording this on Tuesday the 19th.
Uh-huh.
This coming weekend, is Conquest.
Right.
Convention here in Kansas City. It's more of a literary convention.
Sure.
And you know who's going to be here?
Huh.
George R. R. Martin.
Yep. Well, he's not... the thing is that people are going to want to talk to him about it. He's already said that he...
Well, he's already commented on his blog.
Right.
And it's a locked off, no comments...
Sure.
...post. So he's already had his 2 cents worth in, but his editor went to Facebook and complained about this episode as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, not only in terms of the story in the show and where they go in the show compared to where the novel goes, but also
because we know that the show actually is going to have an ending. It's going to end differently than the books.
Right.
They've already said that.
And it's probably going to end before the books.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then there's the dilemma. Do I watch the show till the end, or do I wait till the books come out and then watch the last season? You know, it's that chicken and egg first. Am I going to spoil myself?
Well, remember when they were talking about...
From the show to the books.
Before we got the last Dark Tower book from Stephen King, there was already talk about a Dark Tower movie.
Yeah.
And a Dark Tower TV show and all that fun stuff. And it's
which
like,
apparently is back on.
Back in play.
Maybe.
But people were sitting there going, you know, so if we get the movie, are we going to see the final book? You know, so this happens every time an author has a major series.
And people are still waiting for David Gerrold to finish the next tour book.
Yeah.
Because I interviewed him in, where was it? Wichita?
Yeah.
Wichita, down there at the Exploration Place. He was down there, I think, two years ago? Three years ago now, I think. Wow, where does the time go?
Well, it goes fast. That's where it goes.
Let's see. One white hair, two white hairs.
I don't even talk to me. Yeah. Don't even talk to me over there. We are essentially the same age, and he has got much more brown left in his hair than I do. And
I'm just slightly older.
It runs in my family. I'm gonna be completely gray by 50.
Well, and I don't want to say I've been blessed with the genetics, but my family on my dad's side.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go gray very much at all.
Yeah.
But on my mom's side, all white.
Mm-hmm.
If they keep their hair at all. So I'm somewhere in the middle. So I'm not getting any gray. What is coming in is white.
Yeah.
So but it's a mix because, you know, my genes are mixed. But yeah, it is going to be interesting to see how all this plays out because you do get to that point where a comic book adaptations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm going to get the big, giant, 36-page Empire Strikes Back before the movie comes out.
Right.
Do I read it? Well, I had this dilemma with the Star Trek II novel. Because
mm-hmm.
I had it.
Right.
I'm holding it. Mm-hmm. And I distinctly remember having this internal debate with myself for a while. Do I read it? And spoil the movie, or do I wait, see the movie, and then read the book?
I tell you what, I did not have that with 4. I did have it with five.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, remember, you will remember this as well, that five came out at a particular year. I'm sorry, six came out with a particular year. I had it with six, because we saw the trailer for six was at a Star Trek convention, and it's just I mean, it's like it was a big deal, and that was one where I wanted to see it in the theater without reading the book. Whereas I did not have that. I did not have that kind of issue with wanting to, because I think that as much as I enjoy it now in retrospect, I was not a huge fan of four at the time.
Mm-hmm.
As popular as because I am a continuity guy, and I was watching it going, Jim Kirk knows what swear words are. it's like, what?
Yeah.
And so it, you know.
It's just those particular swear words.
Yeah, okay. He's a history guy. He knows what all the swear words are. Yeah. But even if they're not using it. So it was one of those things where, you know, I grew to appreciate it a lot more, just for the fact that enjoying it is the humor that.
Age will do that to you.
This was a long time ago, actually. But yes, age will. Yeah.
Well, it's like the Star Wars trailer, the mm-hmm. teaser, the 88-second teaser, the first one.
Yeah.
When it hit the internet, you know, I deliberately avoided it
mm-hmm.
because I was going to go see whatever movie it was attached to. It was Big Hero 6.
Right.
So I took James. We went to go see Big Hero 6 again. He's like, we've already seen this. Why are we going again? we're not going to see Big Hero 6. He looked at me. We're going to go see the Star Wars trailer. and that's the kind of thing. You wait. You don't want to spoil yourself. You wait to see that on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think with this thing with Game of Thrones, it is going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because you do have a number of layers
mm-hmm.
on this. Not only from a story standpoint, but also reaction standpoint. You know, reaction from fans,
mm-hmm.
but also reaction from media, because
right.
Variety is covering this now, and Hollywood Reporter. I mean, there's all sorts of not commentary sites,
mm-hmm.
but there's news sites that are now. This is now a thing.
Well, it's because you see the stuff where we are now at the point where. And we had this before, but we're now at the point where you have shows like Mad Men and Walking Dead
mm-hmm.
and Game of Thrones and House of Cards, where the popularity of these shows is so big.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad, yeah. And yet you look at their actual numbers, and they don't compare anywhere near to, say, St. Elsewhere on Network or Dallas or MASH.
Finale of MASH. I was just thinking that.
Yeah, you know, because it was a different model of entertainment.
Yeah.
But you look at the fan bases of these shows, the popularity of these shows, the critical commentary you get, because some of them, you know, Mad Men is all social commentary.
Right.
You know, Walking Dead certainly has some. Breaking Bad, you know, all these things.
Battlestar Galactica.
Yep. So you end up with these things where you've got these active, really big active audiences that are giving you feedback on Twitter and the internet and email
right.
and you know, comments and things like that. In a way that is still fairly new. It's still relatively recent. We tend to forget how so quick some of this happened.
Yeah.
You know, AOL just got bought. Right? And people were like, AOL still exists?
Yeah.
Yes.
Netscape. You remember Netscape?
Netscape.
Alta Vista?
I have news. I know a company that still uses Netscape as its primary browser. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I know. So we're so used to things happening so quickly that we forget some of the stuff is new.
Right.
Relatively new. If you're old enough to remember how things didn't move this quickly, where you didn't have this kind of feedback, when
I
there was
those days,
where there was the 6 o'clock news and the 11 o'clock news,
yeah.
And if you were probably feeling really tired around 11 o'clock, because it's like, oh wow, now it's like, you know, literally the 24-hour news cycle. So it becomes this. It becomes this real interesting thing that, yeah, I mean, where these folk, you know, the reaction to these shows can actually become legitimate news stories. Because it's a big enough
it's a cultural phenomenon.
It's a big
now.
Enough yeah. thing that, thing. You know, it's like, you know, what percentage of the TV audience just sat there and went, what?
Yeah.
You know.
Who shot JR?
Folks, this was a show called Dallas, and
Dallas was just on here 2 years ago.
Once upon a time, in a galaxy far, far away, when there were only three networks,
and that was a huge thing. That was huge thing
yeah.
back then.
Or you know, well, MASH went off the air.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
What 11 million? No,
it was more 20, than that.
21 million,
something like that. Yeah,
yeah. It was a huge audience. Yeah, yeah. It was bigger than the Super Bowl that year.
Mm-hmm.
Is what it was, set records, and I mm-hmm. think that record still stands. I'd have to check. I don't know. I could be wrong.
It may very well, but and so your numbers of something like Game of Thrones or Mad Men or Walking Dead are still much much smaller than that.
Yeah,
but
the interactivity
yeah.
makes up for it.
Which is again like so many other things involving the internet is yeah. good and bad.
Speaking of interacting. On the internet.
Hey.
You can do that with us.
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can send us an email, h2o@scifi4me.com, or you can leave a comment either on our site or if you've got social media, like we all do anymore. We are on all of them.
I should log into my Twitter account.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest, YouTube, and Google+. You can find us pretty much everywhere on the social media. We don't have MySpace or Reddit.
So, I think we're good.
And podcast, you can find us on many of the different podcast player apps, depending on what kind of device you have, Apple or Android. Just look for Sci-Fi for Me Radio. And that is going to do it for us this week. We are going to keep an eye on the whole Game of Thrones fallout and see what happens. We may revisit this at some point in the future. And if we get a chance to talk to George R.R. Martin about it this weekend, who knows, maybe. No guarantees there, though, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And we are played out for another week.
Well, at least we're out of coffee.
Yeah, we're out of coffee, so we'll have to see what happens next week. But keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter. We will update on the status of an episode next week. And that's going to do it for us tonight, Timothy Harvey.
Always a pleasure.
And for everyone here at Sci-Fi for Me Radio, thanks very much for listening. My name is Jason Hunt, and we will be back with another episode soon.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.